Okay, let's start. Okay, I want to talk a little bit for a few moments about, we started this week, in the beginning of the week, about Hittit, about Shemitah, Shvius, the year, the seventh year, and in Eretz Yisrael, the land has Kedusha, and one is not allowed to work the land, and the land has to be a fallow, and you're not allowed to engage in business with the produce of the land, and one is not allowed to even store long-term many food items, fruits and vegetables, cannot even grain, everything cannot be stored more for an extended period of time. All the details, maybe we'll one day spend time learning and discussing some of these things. I'm not familiar with the details, unfortunately.
Does this only apply to crops? Food crops, or does it apply to
everything? Everything. Everything.
Trees, guns?
Yes, trees.
Someone told me in Israel was told she can't take care of a garden the whole year.
It's true. It's true.
To a minimum.
Right. What about even in? What about even flowers? Flowers in your home, or flower pots. You grow avocados.
Do
you have avocados? Okay. I don't know the halachas in detail. So there's a whole shiloh.
Yeah.
What's called nakav, not nakav. There's some hold that if you have if even an otzit she'ein a nakav is problematic. Certainly an office that's knockoff. What about you in an apartment building and you're on the 10th floor when you can't, you have a flower pot.
What if you have the earth from America, you bring the earth there and have a flower pot?
That's another shiloh. Doesn't make a difference. There are many fascinating questions. I do not know the halachas. Yirat Hashem, we're going to try to spend some time going through these halachas. I have there are a lot of new things that have come out in honor of Shvius, but Big Talmid Chachamim, a lot of practical svarim and lamed svarim. Yirat Hashem in the right time. I just want to discuss one thing because we spoke about it in the beginning of the week regarding Trumas and Maestros. So I found out a very interesting article just about Hetan Lechira, not long. I wanted to go and talk about Parashas Noach a little bit. Something is about Shabbos relating to Parashas Noach, a little bit more Jewish. But let's just talk about what we discussed in the beginning of the week, in that if you are fully observant of the laws of Shemitah as they were meant to be observed, we are in a lot of trouble. It's a very, very difficult. In Eretz Yisrael, Kenayin Harbach Shem is a population of 8 million people. Not everyone is Jewish, but there are 8 million people, and not everyone is those that are Jewish, all of them are not yet all religious, not yet. But many, many people are, and many people want to be observant of the laws of Shemitah, and it creates very significant challenges in how we will survive. How do we survive in the modern world, in the 21st century? How do you survive observing the laws of Shemitah, where every farmer just lets his land lie fallow and opens the gates, and it's a time of hefkeros? First of all, how are they going to make parnasa? They're entitled to make parnasa. So how are they going to survive? It's a whole industry. It's not just a few people. It's a whole industry. How would this whole, all the people that are milvim alav, all the different parts, the cogs of the wheel of agriculture, how are they all going to make parnasa? So? And number two, how are we going to survive? What are we going to have to eat? Who's going to go out and take bring to the bakery some flour so you have some bread for Shabbos? It's very, very complicated. I don't know all the details, but this became an issue about probably 150 years ago, maybe more, when for the very first time, a little bit more than 150 years ago, Gesundheit, is when for the very first time a significant yeshuv was established in Eretz Yisrael by Jews. And it's interesting, it's amazing, in only 150 years, the population of 8 million people. It's an amazing thing. And until that point of time, there were not many Jews living there. There was a very small number of Jews living there. And I'm imagining that the small people, the very limited number of people living there at Shul, going back 200 years ago, all of their food, they probably they didn't have big standards. They didn't have gala dinners with exotic food. They lived a very primitive type of existence 200 years ago. And I would imagine whatever food they had, they probably imported from Chutz Liaretz, imported from Turkey, from Syria, from Egypt. It doesn't seem...
I thought, you know, Mike, he wrote the
the Svarim on Shemitah and Yovel in the 1800s. My
great grandfather. Yeah, right. So okay, whatever it does, we don't have. I don't know what records we really have, and even those who maybe they did have food, all of the land was owned by Goyim, just about. Going back, the agriculture part of the land, the part of the land where they were actually having farmers and cultivating the land, it was probably virtually all, entirely, 100% owned by the Arabs, by the non-Jews. And I would imagine it wasn't a matter of selling. They own it. They own the land. So they own the land. They would probably semech on the Rishonim, whoever Yishuv there was, is it's owned by Goyim. And many Rishonim hold it if it's owned by Goyim, so you can then has no Kedusha Shavis, and you can do whatever you want. Today we're dealing with land that's owned by Jews, and now you have to go and actually sell the land to the Goyim. It's a whole different question. If you would go back in time 200 years, first of all, the amount of food you need to survive was not like what it is today, with the high standards and the luxuries and the quality and what you're accustomed to and what you expect. And it was probably very simple to get. Nothing is simple, we don't know, but they probably, I would imagine, imported a lot of things from Chutz Liaretz. And whatever they actually got from Eretz Yisrael is a different type of shaila. You're not selling the land to the Goyim. The Goyim own the land. The Arabs, they own the land. They're the ones who produced all the grain. So a Goy owns the land. According to many Rishonim, a Goy owns the land, has no Kedusha Shavis. So you eat it. We're not dealing with a question like today. Today, the whole Medina is Jewish. What?
By the way, what type of Kenyan did the Eden use to reclaim the land of Eretz
Yisrael? War.
War.
I'm not joking. Well, yeah, first of all, yeah, really, that's really what it is, war.
Go the other way. What kind of Kenyan did the Arab make to steal it?
War. 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 The answer is blood. Blood. No, the answer is blood. Blood and war and the Nevi'im.
If it's owned by a guy and a Jew leased it, does he still have to do a
Shemitah? If it's owned by a guy, yeah. So
he leases it, he has to do it.
Not, there's one thing I think. There's no question that you can ask that you get a clear answer to. That I guarantee you. Any question you're going to ask about Shemitah, well, some say this, some say this. If you can be machmir, it's very good. If you can't be machmir, don't worry, it's also okay. Because the most fundamental thing is that whoever says that in today's day and age, according to what I understand, most Rishonim are of the opinion that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is only Midrabanan. It's only Midrabanan to be Nizer in the Kedusha Shviyas with all of the rules. It is not a biblical mitzvah in our day and age because there is no Beis HaMikdash, and the majority of the Jewish people, there are two elements, are not living in Eretz Yisrael. I don't know all the details of how all these things come together. Do we say that the majority of the Jewish people are living today in Eretz Yisrael? Now they'll start telling you, people will start telling you that today they do. Today, how many Jews are there in the world? 15 million Jews. No one really knows. There's no way to really know. It's impossible to make to put a number on how many Jews. How many Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael? So they'll tell you, 8 million. That's also not true. There aren't 80 million Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. Whatever it is. But people are arguing that today we've reached a tipping point where we have to take into consideration the reality and the possibility that today, in this year, Tav Shin Pei Beis, the majority of Jews are now living in Eretz Yisrael. Is it true or not? There's no way to know. But is it something which is possible? Yes, it is possible. Go back 10 years ago, was it possible? No, it wasn't possible. Today it already is possible. So what's called the Jew? Mi Yehudi. If a Jew has completely, he's intermarried, a Jew has married a non-Jewish woman, is he included in this calculation? I don't, that's a big question. Big question. How do you, in halacha, we're not talking about what, so we're not talking about their children, we're talking about the person himself. These are big, big questions.
What about Yovel?
There's no for sure. Yovel, forget about it. There's no Yovel. That is out of the, no, it's not. It is not. Absolutely not. Yovel and Shemitah have absolutely no halacha connection. Yovel, there's not a shadow of a doubt that there is no Yovel Bizman Hazeh. You need to have Yovel, you have to have a Beis HaMikdash. You have to have, I don't know all the psukim, but Shemitah is a machloikis rishonim, if this, the biblical laws of Shemitah, if they are applicable in our times today. It depends on the Beis HaMikdash, the different factors, different elements, which there's no consensus. There are different opinions. I cannot tell you at this moment all different opinions. So we, halacha l'maisa, one thing is for sure, midrabanan, the answer is yes. That is clear as day, at least, and that's not a small matter, that on a rabbinic level you must observe all of the laws, but it changes the equation, because something which is only rabbinic has a different shulchan aruch. These are the halachas. The rabban, when they made the halachas, there's a different set of rules which result in great leniencies that are not true if it is considered to be a biblical mitzvah. Yes? That's only in regard to kedusha ha'aretz, not for produce. Kedusha ha'aretz, that refers to
yovel. You need a robe.
Yovel is a whole different rule. Yovel is avodim, and
shmita is
that's a different. I apologize. I'm not prepared on all of these problems. These are it's true, but. This is so that we have to appreciate that for the last 150 years, the question has become a very different question. Because Baruch Hashem, over the last 150 years, little by little, of course, obviously exploding, mushrooming with the establishment of the State of Israel, where basically even Goyim, who own land in Eretz Yisrael today, there are Arabs who own land in Eretz Yisrael, there's no question about it, Christians and Arabs, and there's also a distinction between Christians and Arabs. We'll cover that in a moment. But even the Arabs who own land, and even the Christians who own land, even investors, the Chinese who may own some property in Eretz Yisrael, own land, but they are still subject to the authority of the land. And being that the authority of the land is controlled by the Medina, by the state of Israel, which is a Jewish state, so even Goyim who own land in Eretz Yisrael, that's not a real ownership. Because when you have a malchus, there's something called dina de malchusa dina, their authority, preeminent domain, it trumps, it overrides your individual ownership.
Isn't it true that the government owns all the land and nobody owns their own house?
Correct.
No.
It's very complicated. I don't know the laws. Okay, it's a very complicated. He's asking very complicated stuff. I don't know the laws. Every country is different. There's no Bill of Rights in Israel. It's very important to know that. We live in America. In America, we have a Bill of Rights. They can do whatever they want, Eretz Yisrael. You have to. Everybody, say. Yeah, it's everything I told you. You're not going to get any clear answer because you have to understand something. It is a Jewish state, but it is not operated by the laws of the Torah. Okay, that's how it is. The facts. It's a Jewish state by Jews. It's a Jewish state, whatever that means. But it is the laws of the land are not laws that follow the Torah. That's how it is. How does a religious Jew relate to that? A very complicated mix. And by the way, all the Gedolei Yisrael, don't you dare try to take over the government and make it into a halachic state. If you would make it into a halachic state, we'd be finished. We couldn't survive a day. It's very good that it's not a halachic state. A halachic state would be a disaster for many reasons. What? It would be a chorban. If it would be a halachic state, how could it be? It's a chil Hashem. It's a Jewish state. Don't follow halacha? Well, welcome to the world of reality. Life is not so simple. How does that mix when you put those two things together? It's a Jewish owned by Jews, but they don't follow the halacha, and you happen to be an Orthodox religious Jew, a maimon, and you come to Eretz Yisrael and you want to go into the pizza store and you want to buy a piece of pizza, and it's the middle of Shavuos. What do you do? It's a very complicated question, and you're not going to get an answer. You're not going to get a good answer for this.
Look at the Tudah on the wall.
So what are they relying on? It's a very common. Now, first of all, so before the establishment, before the establishment of the State of Israel, the land was owned by non-Jews. There was no Medina. There was no one to talk to. It was owned by non-Jews. That solved a lot of problems to a certain degree. Today, the land is owned by Jews. Oh, but you'll say, what do you mean? What do you mean? The Chinese have a big, own a big farm. This is only go follow the money. Who owns this section of land? Oh, it's owned by this guy, which is owned by this company, And guess what? The Russians, they own the whole farm. So your grain is coming from Goyim. Really? Is this a sovereign state? Do they have reshus from the League of Nations? The United Nations acknowledged that yes, Eretz Yisrael has authority. So just because you're going to have a what's going on over here? Just because you have a non-Jewish ownership, but that non-Jewish ownership can be terminated in a moment's notice by the Medina to a degree. I don't know all the bylaws and how all these things work. Every country is different. Eretz is a very dangerous place for a person as an individual. There's no Bill of Rights. The safest place in the world probably would be America. And America is one of the only countries that has a Bill of Rights. You have real private individual rights, at least according to the Constitution. It's dangerous is that who couldn't care less what it says in the Constitution. There's no Department of Justice. They're out to sleep or they're corrupt. The FBI, then you're in a lot of trouble. But theoretically speaking, you know, there's a Bill of Rights in this country, at least on paper, whatever that's worth. Other countries, you know, there's no Bill of Rights. You go to Eretz Yisrael, you get into trouble in Eretz Yisrael, you're in trouble. In Eretz Yisrael, if the government doesn't like you, you're really in a lot of trouble. You're not going to be able to wiggle your way out so fast because you have no rights. You go to Australia, you're finished. You're really finished. If they don't like you, oh, but it's a free country. No, it's not a free country. It looks like a free country, and as long as America is a very big bracha to some degree. Halavai vaita. And how does the Torah relate to all of this? Good question. How does halach, if Eretz would be a halachic state, is there a Bill of Rights? Does the Torah give a human being a Bill of Rights? I don't know. It's very complicated. It's very, very complicated how all these things work. But one thing we know is that Eretz Yisrael is a sovereign state owned by Jews, and they, to a very large degree, have the ultimate control. So just because we allow the Chinese, the Russians, the Americans, the Argentinians to go and purchase land and to own property, is that really a fulfillment of a goy who acquires land has a kinyan to be oiger the kedusha le'inyan shavias? Really? The goy doesn't really own anything. The goy doesn't own anything. The Medina owns everything. The Medina has the ultimate authority. If the Medina decides that we want the Russians out, how does it work? Can they just tell them, get lost? Get lost. Can they do that? Yes and no. I don't know. But the very fact that it is a sovereign state diminishes to some degree the kinyan that a goy has in Eretz Yisrael in the modern world, which would translate to mean that anything that you eat in Eretz Yisrael is owned by a Jew. And that means this kedusha shvius midrabanan. So you'll ask the question, the animal, I may have mentioned this yesterday, what did the animal eat for breakfast that morning? If the animal has produced milk, excuse me, what, the milk grows from the ground? Where did the milk come from? The milk comes from a 3D printer? Right. The animal ate grain that grows from the land, as kedusha shvius, and it has a digestive system which turns that grain into milk. What does halacha say about that? So it's a good question. More or less, it's a panim chadosha is bol lekan. So more or less, the milk is there's no question it's permitted.
How about if it's a mixture you buy cheese and that has certain vegetables?
These are all good questions, and the many opinions, there are those that are machmer, those that are mekel. Like I told you, you're not going to get even one clear answer on any shiloh you ask. You're right, the animal, its entire sustenance is coming from the land.
But I'm saying it's cheese like bottled or if you have 10% some vegetables in it with cheese.
No,
that's a vegetable cheese.
Meat is not bottled. Meat is bottled?
No.
It's not bottled.
No, there's no bottle, right? There's no. Unless you have a tower with other things, you have something else with it. You know, you have to be, that's a very vague question. You have to go and show me the product, and then we can figure out the different elements and see if there is, maybe there is a bit.
It's a very big problem with wine.
Why? Because wine you're going to store for a very long time.
Different vintages.
You can just, there's one that grows in Eretz Yisrael, it's a very big problem.
Shemitah grapes.
It's very big problem because you're going to store it for a very long time. Great wine, you store for years.
Yeah, right.
The more expensive wines. It's a very big problem.
Every bottle has a Hechsher.
No, 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 that's not true.
A lot of things do not have a Hechsher.
Wineries in Eretz Yisrael, and you'll see, you'll see a notice in the
Hechsher.
2012 vintage, that they even say this is the 2014 bottling, is Shemitah. Stay away.
Exactly. Not according to some. And then also, no, we're not selling you, we're selling you the it's funny to say, yeah, wine, we're not selling you the wine, we're selling you the bottle, the glass bottle for $1,000. These are very funny heterim. I don't know, believe that there, at some point in time, we'll discuss. I just want to talk about the mechira. So today we're in a new situation. We're in a new situation now where Baruch Hashem, the land is owned by Jews. In a way that it was never owned by Jews. Because going back to the time of the Gemara, it was private ownership, it seems. There wasn't a Medina in the time of the Gemara. Today there's a new entity called the Medina. It's like today all the places are grappling, they're struggling. A corporation. What is a corporation? Never existed in Chazal, a corporation. Limited liability. You go and you incorporate. You pay $9.99 online to incorporate. You can incorporate for $10 online. You become a corporation. You have limited liability. What does that mean? There's an entity that you make money from, but you have no shaykhis to. If my company owes money, I declare bankruptcy. You can't come. I have no personal liability. What kind of nonsense is that? If you're a big boy and you can make money from something, so you're responsible. If you have a company and the company's bringing billions of dollars, so that means you have responsibility to pay your workers and your vendors. No, I made this year $1 million, I can't pay anyone back. Bankruptcy, it's a corporation. The corporation goes bankrupt, I have no responsibility. What is that all about? That's connected to Torah Kula. No such thing, I'm not responsible. Of course you're responsible. If it's good enough to make money from, it's good enough that you have obligations that if it injures somebody, if it's a cause, it causes someone to be injured, or if it causes, you can't have it both ways. You can't have something where no, I'm going to take do whatever I want, and I'm no responsibility. That's a very big problem, you know. I hate talking about politics, even though is with the vaccines. You know, the people are making 30. Moderna is making $30 billion forecast for this coming year, be $30 billion. No liability. How could you take $30 billion and not have any achrayis? It's a problem. It is a real problem in the world. And I'm not just saying, the whole world is saying this. You know, it has to be achrayis. Corporation, no achrayis. No achrayis.
It's more than just a corporation.
They're
the government
to
say,
okay, that's
we need
a,
you to develop.
Okay. It's not a good idea. The vaccine is not a good idea. The health issue. Let's talk about a company. A corporation is a new entity that Halacha has never dealt with. And now, when you talk about ribis, and you talk about all of the Chametz and Pesach, this is a challenge to Halacha. For Bali Halacha to understand how to deal with a corporation in Halacha, something that we have no source material for. It's a new creation of man, which is a very complicated, it seems to be very successful. The world seems to be doing very well with this, it appears, so at least we think. How does Halacha deal with all of the Halacha ramifications? The Medina is the same thing. There was never something called the Medina for Eretz Yisrael. The Torah tells you certain rules. It's Hashem gave you the land. So either it belonged until now to the Canaanim, and now it belongs to Klal Yisrael. What does that mean, Klal Yisrael? Is it individual ownership? The Shvatim, there are Shvatim, there's Yechidim. It's very complicated. Today there's a thing called the Medina where the Umayis HaOlam have given a Haskama that there's a Malchus in Klal Yisrael, not a Malch, but there's an entity which is a Jewish state, and then the Jewish state can do things and can't do things, and non-Jews have purchased land. But ultimately, the state, which is a Jewish state, can go and say, sorry, you're out. Get lost. Can it not? And therefore, when you find Goyim owning land and producing grain and fruits and vegetables and selling it to a Jew, can you really say that that is called that it's owned by a non-Jew? With regard to Shemitah, Shavuos, you want to be mechalik between a De'oraisa and a De'rabbanan, that may be very well true. That if this was a biblical halacha, a De'oraisa b'zman hazev Shavuos, oh, then you should have to be much more machmir. But being that b'zman hazev, anyway, it's only a mid-rabbanan, it's not a De'oraisa, according to the vast majority of the Rishonim. So then, listen, who owns the land? A non-Jew owns the land. So if you hold like the Rishonim that said that Yesh Kinyan La'akum to be oiker the Kedusha of Shavuos, so then you're in a very good place. But it is still calculated. Now here is a very important Yisoid, very critical Yisoid, which people unfortunately do not understand. Everyone says this Yisoid, and it puts things in an entirely different perspective. We do a lot of things during the year where we sell, where we get non-Jews involved. Classic example is Chametz. Almost everyone sells their chametz to a non-Jew. Did you ever hear a person getting worked up about this? How could you sell your chametz to a non-Jew? This is a subterfuge, this is a legal loophole. It's not the proper hashkafa to sell your chametz to a non-Jew. It's a trick. You have, Torah says, Baal Yeroheh, Baal Yeimotzeh, and you sell it, you're trying to outsmart. No, we do it, no questions asked. What else do we do with Goyim? We also, okay, well, that's really part of Shemitah. Yeah, okay, it's part of Shemitah. But you don't know, Prisbul is not Goyim. Prisbul is not Goyim.
Amir al-Akum on Shabbos.
Amir al-Akum on Shabbos. You're not giving ownership. That's not a mechira. The other example is Shvisas Behemtai. That's another very classic thing, which is similar. Shvisas Behemtai, where if you have milk, you're not allowed. It's part of the Aseres HaDibros. Your animals are not allowed to work on Shabbos. You are not allowed to put your animals to work on Shabbos. There are many industries. There are animals that are working on Shabbos, and the animals are owned by Jews. It's a very big problem. So what is the solution? You sell it. It's done all the time. It's done all the time in Eretz Yisrael in different industries. You sell the animals to non-Jews. Ribis. Okay, what about ribis? So we have heter iska.
Right.
Heter iska is not involved in Goyim, but it does involve a subterfuge, so to speak, where you take the same exact transaction and you reconstruct it as in a business investment. Why are you allowed to do that? If the Torah says don't lend with ribbis, don't lend with ribbis. Don't go look for excuses. All of these things, no one blinks an eye. Sell the chametz to the god. Sell the animals to the god. You mentioned the bechor. The bechor is about to be born. If a Jew owns the animal, the bechor is about to be born, you're finished. Because a bechor that is born b'zman hazeh is the biggest nightmare for anyone. Because what do you do with it? You can't give it to the kohen. There's no beis hamikdash. You're not allowed to give it a blemish. So you have to let it graze until it gets a blemish. It can take years. And in the meantime, it consumes an enormous amount of food. And in the meantime, it gets violent. It gets big and fat and violent. And it's a nightmare for anyone. So what do? You don't let it happen. Don't let it happen. You make a shutfis. You make sure that before the animal gives birth for the first time, that a non-Jew owns the mother, and that way there is no din b'chor if there's a shutfis between a Jew and a guy. All of these things have been done from time immemorial, and no one blinks an eye. All of a sudden, when it comes to Shavuos, no, not me. I don't rely on the het and mechira. You go to Eretz Yisrael, you go to Nechiz Darga. Where did you get the bread from? I don't know all the details, but major segment of society in Eretz Yisrael relies upon the Medina, takes land that it owns, or the Rabbanah, they work it out, where they sell it to a non-Jew for 1 year, or 2 years really. It's really a 2-year sale because it has to span the beginning and the end. And thus, We rely upon the opinions that hold that if a non-Jew owns the land, there is no kiddush of shviyas. And then whatever grows is not subject to all of these rules. So today, it's a fact that it's considered to be only when you're very desperate. Only if there's no other solution do you rely upon the hetter mechira. What are you embarrassed of? Why are you embarrassed to rely on hetter mechira when you do the same thing for chametz, when you do the same thing for shvisas behentai, when you make a hetter iska? What's the problem? This is a very simple answer. All of the things that we do without any problem are all to avoid negative. You're not allowed to have in your possession chametz. Okay, let's get rid of it. How do you get rid of it? Well, I can destroy it. Oh, of course you're allowed the money to destroy it. So you know what? I'm not going to destroy it. I'll sell it to a guy. So now Pesach comes. When Pesach comes, are you having pleasure from your chametz? Are you having pleasure? Pesach has come. The chametz is locked up. I don't know from it. I don't see from it. Chametz over love a Pesach. Okay, that's a shaila. It's the rice of the Rabbanon. That's a machloek. It's the rice of the Rabbanon. Chametz over Pesach. But it's certainly not kares. There's no chiv kares for chametz over love a Pesach. But during Pesach, I have no shaychus of chametz. The animal is worth, the animal, you sell the animal to a non-Jew, and the animal is working on Shabbos. So are you deriving benefit from that? Okay, that has to be discussed. But let's just take the chametz case for right now. Shviyas, that's not the case. The heter mechira is so that you can actually work the land, that you can do something positive. Chametz, you're selling the chametz so you should not be in violation of having it in your possession. You're removing it. When you're selling the land to a non-Jew, what are you doing? You're then going back to the land and working the land, engaging in the land and deriving benefit from what you're really not supposed to be doing. Chametz, you're selling it to get rid of it. That's how you're removing yourself. Here you're selling it to a guy in order that you can use it. You can engage in it. That's a fundamental difference. It's a completely different angle of how you are engaging a non-Jew. If you're engaging a non-Jew so that you can avoid something and you can be passive, that is acceptable. But to use a non-Jew so that you can be active in violating the Torah, that is something that is not ideal. Not that it cannot be done, and it was done for generations, and it's still being done because we have really no choice. There's almost no other alternative in many situations. But it's not an ideal. It's not an ideal to bring in a non-Jew so that I can actively now do exactly what I was doing before. Pesach, you're not eating the chametz. I'm not eating the chametz. I don't own the chametz. I'm using the non-Jew, in fact, to help me dispose of the chametz. I'm using the non-Jew to achieve what the Torah wants to achieve. Don't own it. Don't possess it. And when it comes Pesach, I'm not engaging in with the chametz. I'm not eating the chametz. In fact, I use the goy to achieve the goal of bal yeh roh, bal yeh matzeh. The goy has helped me achieve bal yeh roh, bal yeh matzeh. Here, the non-Jew is helping me work the land. The Torah told you, don't work the land. The Torah says, it's shviyas. Shviyas, don't work the land. Don't engage in business. Don't store the produce. Oh, goy, come into my possession. So now I can work the land. I can engage in business and I can store it. You're going against, you're using the non-Jew to go against the grain of what you're supposed to do. It's completely the opposite of what you're doing when it comes to mechiras chametz. Okay, that's a very fundamental difference between the two. Now again, halacha l'maisa, in the early years, when Eretz Yisrael, about 150 years, when this started to become an issue, many Gedolei Yisrael, there was a very big machlokes. Very, very big machlokes. Some held that it was pikuach nefesh. It was mamish pikuach nefesh, and you have no choice. And other Gedolim said it was worth being moisa nefesh for. And they felt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us Eretz Yisrael, and this is the halacha, and relying upon everything, the Rambam says there's no such thing as a guy acquiring possession, it doesn't make a difference. And it became a very, very, you know, it was a very, very big nisayon.
Didn't a lot of people hold the Gemara mentions about the prohibition of selling land?
Oh, okay, excellent. Another, very important. So then there's another issue is that if you have the land, it's one thing that until now, the land already was owned by the non-Jews. We went into Galus. We went into Galus. They conquered the land. It wasn't. Today there's a problem of lo sichonim. You're not allowed to show favor. There's a prohibition to sell land in Eretz Yisrael to a guy. So how do we avoid that issue? So here are some of the heter. One heter is a tremendous chiddush. The prohibition of lo sichonim only applies to an oyved avodah zarah. A Yishmaeli, many Poskim want to say there is no prohibition of lo sechonim regarding a Yishmaeli, because a Yishmaeli believes in Hashem. So since the Torah, when it says lo sechonim, it says in the context of the Oivdei Avodah Zarah, people who deny Hashem's existence, that's not considered to be a violation. Another common heter for lo sechonim is you're not selling the land forever. You're only selling the land short term, for a year and a half or 2 years during the Tekuf of Shavuos. Lo sechonim is only a deraisa when it's sold permanently, forever. So therefore, that would not. Another very interesting heter, which is very bizarre, is when you sell the land to the guy. Listen to this heter; it's very, very funny. Moment. Let's talk about a tree. I'm not selling you the land. I'm selling you the tree. I'm selling you the nutrients in the ground. I'm selling you the barest elements of what's in the ground that the tree needs to survive. And I'm telling you, I demand that as soon as the sale is over, I want you to take the tree, pull it out of the ground, and bring it somewhere else. Even though you know the goy will never do that. That's ridiculous, right? The goy is not, but I'm not selling it to you. I'm selling you the tree, just the tree and the nutrients, what it needs, and also, I strongly advise you to pull the tree out of the ground and bring it to a different location.
So, and then put it back later.
And then bring it back later? I don't know about that. Well, and we know, you know in advance that the guy's not going to do that. But, it's like when they pass a bill in Congress, when they try to pass a bill for $3.5 trillion, and the bill and the budget is like this big. Do you know what it says in that thing over there? No one knows what it says there. No one knows. And when they all of a sudden you wake up 10 years later and they say, you know what that bill? That bill said some ridiculous things that are gonna make your life miserable. Whoever passed this bill? Well, when you passed the budget, this is included in the budget, no one even knows about it. So in the bylaws, when you sell the guy the land, you're not really selling the land. You read the fine text, it says you're only selling him the tree and the nutrients and certain parts, which, and also there's a condition, pick up the tree and bring it somewhere else. He's not going to do this. Doesn't matter he's not going to do this. As long as on paper that's what it says, that removes the violation of lo sichonim, the violation of selling land to a non-Jew in Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, you have it in Gemara Bavli.
So basically you have three different things come together. It's a limited type of sale, and exactly, and you're only selling the produce, you're not actually selling the land. Number two, you're not selling it permanently.
Why isn't that tree a sale? It grew in Eretz Yisrael. If you're only selling the tree and the nutrients.
No, you're right. It's not taking away shvius. It's taking away a side problem. We today, Baruch Hashem, own most of the land. But we have a problem of shvius. So what is the solution? The solution is sell the goy the land. Now, it's not going to take away the problem of shvius, but by selling the goy the land, you're violating a new aveira. of lo sechonim.
So how do you get that away from that? Because you didn't sell the land.
Right.
You didn't sell the land. It's a goy's land, and he's growing this produce on this land.
The produce still has kedusha shvius because it's being yoinik from the holy land. But there's a problem. You did another aveira. You're not allowed to sell land to a goy. How are you allowed to use the heter mechira? You're selling land to a non-Jew. That itself is an iser d'oraisa.
So how'd you get around it?
So as I'm telling you, there are three heterim. It's only also lo sechonim to an ovid avodah zara.
The last one
is I'm not selling you the land. I'm selling you the tree.
Okay, fantastic.
But it's so very
and
good.
Now this year, when something grows on my land, even though you own the tree,
I don't understand.
It's not shvius.
It is shvius.
So it is shvius.
It is.
So how did it help you getting away with shvius?
What do you mean?
No. You're saying right. You're selling. Right, you are correct. You are selling part of the bare minimum of the land. I think about it. He does explain what you are. You are selling him. Let me rephrase the question. There's how the prohibition of lo sechonim is limited. It is limited. You're only not allowed to do it for no purpose whatsoever. When you're doing it for a purpose, there's a reason why you're selling him the land. Then the prohibition does not apply. Problem is when you're selling the land, you don't just sell. Okay, the place where the tree is growing. You sell the whole thing. That's the way it goes. You sell the whole thing. When you sell, there's going to be extra wasted land that's not going to be needed to avoid the shvius prohibition. You're selling too much land. The part of the land that you need to sell in order to avoid the prohibition of shvius may in fact be permitted. But when you make a transaction of selling land, there's always excess. And that excess will be automatically is going to be a violation of lo sechonim.
Extra.
So you have to limit the amount of land that you're selling just to the bare minimum. So you're right, the part of the land that is needed to avoid the iser d'oraisa of shvius, that has to be sold. But
and that you're getting benefits from.
And that, so that's permitted. But any mashu more than that, that you're not allowed to get, that would theoretically be a violation of lo sechonim.
Because we know lo sechonim, you can give a guy a gift for the holiday.
If you're getting something back in
trust, he's going to work better for you.
But exactly.
Then you're allowed to do.
So, but it's a very fine line. What is called? It's a very fine line of what is considered to be a benefit for you and what is considered to be just a violation. So therefore, the sale of the land to the goyim so that we do not violate shvius has to be the bare minimum in order to lessen the problem of lo sechonim. Sechakol, he writes over here, there are three things which come together when they sell land to the non-Jews. Number one is it's not a lo sechonim thing, it's not permanent, it's only short term. They don't sell the whole land. Lo sechonim is only, it's a permanent sale. Here it's only for 2 years, or a year and a half, before and after, in order to hold the whole cycle. And number two is you're not, it's not permanent. Okay, it's only for a short term.
You sell exchange mainly for money. You sell pay, it has to be some favor back. You can't give it to them free. I mean, there has to be some.
You're getting money for it. Okay, there was something else I said before. I forgot. Okay, and then the third thing was that you're not selling every part of the land. I mean, the sale is worded in such a way where you're just selling the bare minimum in order to lessen the prohibition of lo sechonim. The first thing I said was that lo sechonim, according to some, does not apply to an Arab. Only applies to an idolater. And an idolater, so what you say about the Christians? Machlekes. The Christians called Avi Avodah Zarah because they believe in Shiduf. Good Christian has three gods. Me, myself, and I.
We really know who they really are.
So the question is, the question is there really an Isra Derais of selling land to a Yishmaeli? So these are heterim, which we rely upon. What's in the will point out is we find that we don't find anywhere this. What do they do all the years in Eretz Yisrael? What do they do during the time of the Bayis Shri? Obviously, the Torah says, Test me. Hashem says, V'tzivisi es birchasi lechem hashana hashishis v'yosos es hatzul l'shloish hashanim. Okay, that's obviously the ideal. Did Klal Yisrael really do this all the years, the time of the Tannaim and the Amoraim, after the Churban Bayis Sheni? What happened? The Churban Bayis Sheni, there were still people living in Eretz Yisrael.
People
after the Churban Bayis Sheni, look, Beitar, until Beitar, and all the stories in the Gemara, they had Beitar.
They were all. That
was 52 years later. That was 52 years later. But even after Bar Kokhba, it wasn't Eretz Yisrael after, during the entire Tkuva of the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi was written up until the year 500, our calculation, from now 2020 to 21, until the year 5. There are people living in Eretz Yisrael. How come we don't find anywhere, not even a single remez or zecher, that for the first 1,000 years, even more, for the first almost 1,500 years, after the Churban Bayis Sheni, any mention of Heter Mechira? Nothing. Not even.
They kept Shemitah.
What? Did they keep Shemitah? They didn't have a Sakana?
Is there any place that says they didn't keep Shemitah?
No.
So assume they
got it from good sources. They got it from the
It's a very big
Nisoyon. Did they keep Shabbos?
How many Jews even own land, though?
Right.
Oh, a lot of people.
Okay, it's a big question. Now, okay. Another very important thing I forgot to mention is now during the time of the Chazanish, I don't know all the laws. I don't know, but during the time of the Chazanish, there was the mayor mentioned this last week, is where there were many very good observant Jews that were willing to be Meiser Nefesh to observe Shemitah, and the government said, I'm not sure all the products, maybe it was before the British, during the time of the British, I don't know, if you don't work the land, we take it away from you. We need food. We're not accepting this business with Jews. All of a sudden, Shabbos. You want Shabbos, so you go into your house Shabbos. But now it's going to affect the country. If you want to let the land lie fallow and not work the land and produce food for the country, then it's a crime. So we need every morsel, every stalk of grain that grows. We have a population, a starving population. We're not letting you be observant of Shemitah at the expense of society that doesn't even know what Shemitah is. So if you don't want to work your land, we will punish you and we will take it away from you and we'll give it to someone who wants to work the land so people have what to eat. And don't force the country to subscribe to your religious beliefs. So they went to the Chazanish, and the Chazanish, so the Chazanish, this is very complicated what to do in this situation. So the Chazanish allowed them to plow the land, in other words, to trick them. Obviously, the Chazanish held that this threat by the government, I'm not sure which government we're referring to, who we're referring to, was it the State of Israel at that point in time? Maybe, I don't know. Maybe before?
Jewish agency.
Wherever, I'm not sure, I don't know the details. But and obviously the Chazanish felt, they felt that this was a threat that was not really rooted in truth. Is that there was enough food, enough land to be cultivated, that the people who needed food will get their food. It was just an excuse to take away the land from religious people.
Right.
And so what are we going to do? If we're going to lose our land, we're not going to deliver. So he told them, what you do is you can plow the land to show that, look, we're working. But don't plant any seeds. Just play along with them. And next year, plow it again. So you should not be nena, you should not derive benefit from the plowing that you did. You can plow the land to save the land from being being seized. That's what he says over here. What?
He brings this story
here.
It sounds like very apocryphal. I don't think there was ever such a rule.
You told me this story. When I was reading this, I told you this to me.
About the Hatzir.
What?
For the animals.
No, you told this to me. I remember you told this to me. Is that if you're not going to work the land, we're going to take it away from you. He brings down the story of it. Maybe this is what it says over here. So the Chazanish says, okay, you can work the land, but don't derive benefit from it, which is a chiddush also, because even that you're not supposed to do. But he says, because it was mamash a hefsid meluba, they would take away the land.
You're allowed to plow the land to prevent hefsid.
Even maybe it goes upon that, but that's a different type of that's a different type of hefsed. That's the land itself is going to be damaged. It's over here. You're trying to get away from the government. Okay, it's complicated. It's not so simple.
According to the Rambam, deification of any part of nature is avodah zarah. That includes deification of a human being. And I remember someone asked Rabbi Soloveitchik about Unitarianism.
Yeah.
And he said that also is a shayla of avodah zarah.
Okay. So you're saying that who are you selling it to? Who are you selling it to? Bottom line is, this is an issue, the Hetem Mechira is an explosive issue. It has never, we have no Mekar for the Stotzeru the Yisoides. We don't have, at least he writes, I'm reading over here from this very Choshev Sefer, Das Kodisa, and he's citing other sources, that it's something that is, in the last 150 years is the first time it came into existence, this idea to sell Jewish-owned land to a non-Jew in order to avoid the problem of Shvi'is. This question, this idea, this concept never came upon, entered into the minds of the Jewish people until 150 years ago for different reasons. Number one, it was the most anti-Jewish thing you can possibly do, I guess, to even fathom to sell land to a non-Jew. Or anyway, the land was owned by non-Jews, so it didn't make it. It wasn't a question of selling it. It didn't have a choice. Jews were not held in high esteem for the last 2,000 years, so it wasn't so. Anyway, they owned the land, and during the time of the Beis Hamikdash, it would be the greatest avera possible. This is an incredible issue. It never existed such a thing until 150 years ago. This concept of selling Jewish-owned land to non-Jews in order to be able to have what to eat, al derech hateva, during the year Shemitah. That's number one. Number two, today there's a Medina. A Medina is a creation of man. It's a new entity that is impossible to be defined in halach. What is the Medina? Suddenly there's a very big thing. We say the principle called Dina de Malchus Adina. According to many Paiskim, Medina de Malchus Adina only applies in the entire world with the exception of one country. Eretz Yisrael.
Right.
Eretz Yisrael is the only place where there's no such thing as Din de Malchus Adina. Din de Malchus Adina is where you live in a non-Jewish state.
Right.
A non-Jewish state, and the government says you pay tax, you do this, even though it doesn't say that in Halacha. When it comes to money, Din de Malchus Adina. But if you're living in a Jewish state, and a Jew, even if he's not religious, tells you this is what you're supposed to do with regarding to money, excuse me, you're Jewish, I'm Jewish. Divrei Harav, Divrei HaTalmud, Divrei Mishoimin. The Ribbono Shel Olam says differently. You're irreligious, you're not yet religious. I'm religious, or I'm also trying to be religious. Divrei Harav, Divrei HaTalmud, Divrei Mishoimin. There's no such thing as Dina de Malchusa Dina in Eretz Yisrael. That's what it says. So, and now there's a Medina, which is a man-made entity that is recognized by the Ummah Yisraelam. This only makes the questions even more complicated. So this thing never exists. Yeah.
It says v'shavta ha'aretz, Shabbat Hashem. It doesn't say who owns it. The land has to have a Shabbat.
So you're saying is a lot of the Gedolei Yisrael, the previous generations, this is a very big issue, is they say, have a moon, have a moon, have a moon. It is... Shavs are Shabbos LaHashem, absolutely. But you can't tell this to people. This the halachic world, which is a very technical approach. And then there is Hashkafa. There are many Gedolim who are loichim this Melchama for generations about observing Shemitah. Their arguments are fully grounded in Hashkafa. Emuna b'Hashem. Problem is, unfortunately, there are many people that are not religious, and they don't subscribe to this hashkafa. They want to follow halacha, and with many people, you have to take a very technical halachic approach. It says v'shavzar Shabbos laHashem. That's a hashkafic approach. In Shulchan Aruch. Is if a non-Jew owns the land, there's no Kedusha Shvi'is, but yet he has a higher authority called a Jewish state. When you go down into the world of technical halacha, and many people want, that's what they want. They don't want to hear Hashkafa. You can't force a person to have emunah. You can't make a mandate. The emunah mandate. Emunah by definition means it's your choice. Free will. Many gedolim here are very much focused on the emunah. Emunah, okay, 100%. But many people are not holding on that level. But yet they want to follow halacha. If halacha allows it, okay, I know shmita, mishav, shas, lashem, there are a lot of things that I'm not getting ready for. I just now don't want to be in violation of the Torah's halakhic law. And that becomes a very technical. So let's open up Shulchan Aruch and let's go find the halacha A, B, C, D. Is there such a thing of a goy owning land in Eretz Yisrael as manas when you have a Medina? Is there such a thing? Well, how come we never found such a thing existing in the last 2,000 years? We never heard of such a thing as the Mechira. Why is Heter Mechira different than selling your chametz to a goy? No one has a problem selling your chametz to a goy. Why is Heter Mechira any different? Well, there is a fundamental difference. There really is a fundamental difference between the two. What about the prohibition of selling land to a goy of low sechonim? These are all complicated issues. And each one of these issues, there are many, many opinions. And when all these things come together, you create a concoction of issues, which really is explosive. And you go to Eretz Yisrael, there are every Hechsher has a whole different approach to deal with Shavis. And everyone does what they feel comfortable doing. I will stop over here. I hope at least this is worth something. Mir Tashem, tomorrow, a new day.